It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's a day we always look forward to on this program, the monthly visit by Mayor Bill Peduto, who is with us in studio for the entire hour. So be sure to call us with your comments or your questions at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. What questions do you have for Mayor Peduto today? What things would you like to discuss with him? He's here. You can call him. 412-246-2002 is the number. Mayor Peduto, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's good to be back.
There's a lot to get to, but I'm guessing that you, like many of our listeners, are a little preoccupied with what's about to take place tonight between the Pirates and Cubs at PNC Park, a one-game winner-take-all playoff game featuring two of the top five pitchers in baseball, Gerrit Cole of the Pirates, Jake Arrieta of the Cubs. There has been so much bad news in the past week or so. It impacts us certainly here in Pittsburgh. How nice is it to have this kind of distraction, which is so exciting for people and something for Pittsburgh to rally around?
I think it's more than a distraction. I really do believe that, you know, you need things like this to bring people together, that there are so many different ways that we can tear ourselves apart, and we can identify ourselves as being different from other people because we believe in this or we support that. And that when you have something that actually brings you together, it's the basis of getting a lot of great things done. So I'm in the mode of feeling the electricity. And let me just explain that. That sounds kind of weird, I guess. But there is a buzz in the air in downtown right now. And there are people wearing T-shirts to work and getting away with it because it says the word Pirates. And people can feel, even if they don't have a ticket to the game, that they're a part of it. And I was just in a meeting with a mayor from Romania. And he was talking about how he went to the game on Saturday and how cold it was and everything else and how he'll be down there today. Doesn't have a ticket, but just wants to be in that feel of it. It's real. It's real. There is a buzz in the air that makes it feel great. It's just like that first time when the Pirates were there and that duck was in the river and people just all of a sudden felt that Pittsburgh had come back. And it wasn't simply because a baseball team that didn't have a winning record for 20 years was in a postseason game. It was because people felt good about Pittsburgh. That's what's happening right now.
And everybody is your friend. Anybody that's like you rooting for the Pirates is your buddy. You're saying hello to perfect strangers because, as you say, they're wearing T-shirts. We have our own blackout going on right here in the studio. You and I and your main man, your communications manager, Tim McNulty here. We all have dark suits on. So, Jay Hay, if you're listening, we are following your instructions.
We're with you, brother.
Have you had any contact with Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel about some kind of friendly wager on the game?
I haven't. I have had conversation with Chicago Alderman Joe Moore, an old buddy of mine who we put together a little group called Local Progress back around 2008 with a couple guys named Bill de Blasio and Eric Garcetti, who are now mayors of New York and L.A. And Joe and I have a little wager going, along with Councilman Gilman. We all belong to an organization called the Democratic Municipal Officers and represent our respective states. So I got some good Chicago deep dish Giordano's pizza coming after tonight.
You're just going to count on it. It's showing up.
I'll go over to Gilman's house, cook it up in the oven. So, but it's
over to Gilman's house.
Yep. It's you know, the other wager on the other side's chipped ham. So, I think, you know, Joe's a good buddy, but I'm not sure how they ship it. But I'm sure that there's a way that it will be able to be appreciated.
We'll get your prediction on the outcome here before we wrap up. I'll ask for that later, but in all seriousness, what kind of planning does an event like this require from you and your staff in terms of extra police and that kind of thing?
We basically break it up into two areas, the operations side and the public safety side, and we have Chief Costa, who's working on all the different components of the parking, traffic flow, management, garbage disposals, porta potties, all the different public work needs, all of those things, and then working hand in hand with the public safety department and the different bureaus of public safety. We want everyone to have a fun, safe time. We want to make sure we keep them safe. And it's just a coordination really through a lot of different departments that's headed up by both the Chief of Operations, Public Works Director, the Bureau Chiefs, and the Public Safety Director.
Speaking of police, it looks like the city is on the verge of hiring Pittsburgh's first transgender police officer. What are your feelings about this, Mayor, and the potential issues it brings?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not even sure if that is the case. It's not a criteria that we have as part of a test to become a police officer, nor is it something that we could even ask if, you know, for legal purposes. It's, you know, do you have the college credits that are required? Did you test right on the scores? Did you pass the physical and the background checks? All of those things are the criteria of making a police officer. And then how well you do through your training as a cadet determines whether or not you get to wear the badge of the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police. We seek diversity, and we have one of the most diverse classes when it comes to gender and race. But, you know, the questions of whether members of the transgender community can become police officers have already been dictated years and decades ago under the protection that they and other protected classes are given. So it's interesting that there's a group out there that promotes diversity when it comes to sexual orientation, but at the same time is trying to say, well, there's somebody who's different within our police bureau. I don't view them as different. I view them as the same, that they'll be a member of the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police. And as long as they're willing to work hard, be honest, treat people with respect, I welcome anybody who wears that uniform.
And certainly it's been reported that you've called this a historic moment for the city.
I actually did not. That was a little bit of journalistic artistic
license.
Thank you, guys. If you notice, it's not in quotes. It was just the reporter adding it to it after they had spoken with an organization that represents sexual orientation individuals that are and should be treated equal. I don't understand how that's treating somebody equal. I guess I'm at a loss because, you know, if we really want to have a diverse police bureau, if we really want to have a diverse city, then you don't start calling out individuals. You know, this never came from the city. This was never I wouldn't even know, to be quite honest. So I want good police officers, period. I want police officers that represent the community. I want police officers that treat people with respect. And that is the criteria of wearing that uniform.
412-246-2002 if you want to join our conversation with Mayor Peduto. We have Jim in Squirrel Hill on the line. Jim, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much, sir. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing good, Jim.
What wonderful, wonderful. I think we're all very happy about the Pirates, and I think that I didn't realize that the manager was a Republican, but that doesn't matter. I have a question for you. Since we're all embedded in economic development and concerned about job creation, what I was wondering was, what's the most interesting, surprising, or important thing you've learned about economic development during your tenure as the mayor?
Wow. The most interesting, surprising.
Jim?
You know what? I this is going to sound bad, and I hope people don't take it as being bad, but it is surprising. No good deed goes unpunished. You know, it's... We've been trying to do things in a much different way. We're trying to put together different plans that aren't broker-based or developer-based, but community-based. And it's a really challenging obstacle. And you look at like what was just happened in Penn Plaza, where we had 200 people who would have been thrown out in the street within 6 months with nowhere to live, and people that are elderly in their 80s that have lived nowhere else. And we had to work really, really hard to get a developer who has every right to develop his private property the way he wants and every right to throw people out. And we talk about trying to negotiate a deal And in that deal, there is part of the land that's city land that's in there that has an old playground that is one of our worst upkept playgrounds because we haven't invested anything in it for decades. And we talk about using that as part of the development, but at the same time, returning a green space playground to the community. And immediately, the community gets up in arms and says they oppose it. I'm all for swing sets. I'm all for having public spaces within a walking distance of all of our neighborhoods. But I'm more about people. And I'm more about 200 people who have no private rights to force the person who they rent off of to keep them in that building, to come to government and ask them, please help me, and to put together a deal that is able to help them. And we may have to move the swing sets a half a block and people saying, no, no, you sold us out. You know what? You got to make deals in order to make things happen. And if it means the swing sets have to be a half a block further down, but 200 people have a home in East Liberty that they've called a home, then that's a good deal. And I get upset reading on Facebook about how bad it was, how we did it. You know, there was the deal with the Hill. And being able to take half of the wealth that the Penguins will develop on that and putting it into the center part of the Hill. And people saying, no, not good enough. And that is the hardest part of dealing with economic development, because you try and change the way things have been done forever in this town. And no matter what it is that you do, there's always a group that will be out there to say, no, not good enough. And it really takes the wind out of your sails.
Didn't you have a sense of that, though, going in? Didn't you know that if you brought new ideas to the table, that this is the reaction you would get?
I had it, you know, I worked on over $3 billion worth of development as a council member, probably more economic development than any mayor in the city's history had been directly involved in. So I have a really good sense on what it means to do development and really to put together in my old council district a community first proposal. And I always had, there was always some sort of level of objection. But I think we have done more in this year and a half to really change the way that economic development is approached, and not so much under a system where it's a city that's for sale, but a system where the city is open for business and it's a more of an open process, that I really thought with some people, they would have been more supportive than trying to find and search for a way to be in opposition.
Well, as long as we're talking about this, we have Dan from East Liberty with a question on the upgrades to the park by Penn Plaza. Dan, welcome. You're on with Mayor Peduto.
Hello, Mayor Peduto.
Hi, Dan.
How's it going?
Well, it's been pretty good.
That's good. I have a question. The basketball courts at Enright Park were recently resurfaced. So there have been upgrades to that park in the last couple years. It isn't this ignored piece of public property that no one's paying attention to.
And your point?
My point being is you just went on the air saying that this area has not had any improvements in years, and it has.
The basketball courts have been redone, but if you look at the rest of that park, it really isn't one of our best parks, and nor is it one of the better parks in the East End. The idea of being able to put together a new park and to be able to keep 200 people and allow them to keep East Liberty as their home has to be done in a balance. Now, if you want to go with me, and I didn't know if you were there on Sunday at the picnic or not, but to go and to talk to these folks and ask them what's more important, their lives or the swing sets, and then I'll gladly go with you over there to be able to do it. But to think that you can just get everything you want out of a private development and not have anything given back is foolishness.
Thank you for the phone call, Dan. You are just back from a business trip to Italy for two sets of conferences on best practices in innovation, sustainability, and resiliency. Talk about what you learned on this trip and how it will be applied to Pittsburgh.
Biggest takeaway was the interaction with the other 28 mayors from around the world. Moments that I think I don't, you know, I've had a lot of great moments and a lot of bad moments in these past 20 months, but talking about the Syrian refugee situation with the mayor of Athens, Greece on my left side and the mayor of Ramallah, Palestine on my right side, listening to the mayor of Amman, Jordan, talking about how the world needs to be able to do more and having real discussions about why it was that Pittsburgh was one of 18 cities that said the same thing to the president, talks a lot about resiliency. And how so? Because there are constant stresses and there are shocks that happen to cities. Stresses are things that over a number of years that you need to address that you don't, and then you end up in a situation where you're in. The economy in Detroit is a good example of that. Bridges in Pittsburgh that haven't been maintained and now at a shock level with our infrastructure is a good example of that. And then shocks are the things like a refugee situation that hasn't been this great since World War II, or a tsunami that hits in Southeast Asia, or an earthquake that hits the west coast of California. And unless you prepare now and start to thinking of it in almost like 40-year cycles, then when the stresses happen and the shocks occur, because they're going to, you are going to be facing a lot more strife, money situation, and an inability to react. If you start to plan and put into infrastructure improvements simple things, like when redoing a senior center and putting in the resources that are needed when we hit a cold wave so that people can stay there, and making sure that cots are available if they need to stay overnight. Doing those types of situations and thinking about those types of situations of where your stress factors are and where your shocks may be will help you to be better prepared. And city governments are starting to plan in that way. It goes well beyond sustainability measurements. This is really starting to think about all of the different factors that a city or a region will have. The takeaways from it came from a lot of different consultants who consult cities from all over the world. There wasn't any one particular issue that I felt that really was germane to Pittsburgh, but it was really the whole overall concept of how you plan.
And when it comes to the refugee situation with so many Syrian refugees who have poured into Europe, and there has been discussion about taking refugees here, how many refugees, as long as you have joined with several other mayors in offering to accept some of those refugees, what would be the number that we would take here?
I don't know that number. And, you know, I read on Twitter and Facebook that I said it was 10,000. That was the number the president said for the entire nation. Yeah. And unfortunately, then people comment on it and it becomes its own story, just the way that the social media takes off on those types of things. We have been in touch with our Welcoming Pittsburgh partners. So that involves Jewish Family and Children's Services, Holy Family Institute, the Islamic Center of Pittsburgh, and a number of individuals that have reached out directly to us to say that they would like to be a part. We aren't taking, the city of Pittsburgh government isn't taking, but we have the ability to facilitate for many organizations that can. So what that number ends up being is what the capacity is with all those different organizations to be able to do so. Now, the comments that are part of the publications now, whether it's newspapers or online or television stations, have been the harshest comments that I've read of anything. They surpass bike lanes in the harshness.
That's saying something.
As a representative of government and representing a city, I can only say we are better than that. The whole idea that we are bringing ISIS to Pittsburgh through a Trojan horse is ludicrous. There are children who are dying. There are people who are leaving their country in the middle of the night, leaving their loved ones back to trying to get somewhere, getting onto a ship and taking the risk of dying in order to be able to do so. And there is a possible way of helping them. And to simply say no, to simply say it's not my problem, I would not want to live in a world or a city like that. And I would never be able to look back and think that my time as the mayor of the city of Pittsburgh, I did everything that I could when I know that there were people who were dying that I didn't even reach out to try and coordinate an effort between the organizations that are there to help them in order to bring them here. So
is part of it too for you, Mayor, that, you know, here you were just in Italy. That's, you know, that's your heritage. And maybe that reminds you, is if you need reminders, that you are, like so many others, like myself, descendants of immigrants to this country. And that from that standpoint, it kind of puts us all in the same boat.
It's who I am. My grandfather raised me. He came from Italy in 1921 with a second grade education. He lived in my house the entire life. He let me know about the stories of what it was like in Carnegie in the 1920s. When he was told he wasn't welcome, he let me know as a man how pride becomes affected by that, and I will never let this city make that same mistake twice. And by the way, long before my grandfather ever came here, Syrians came here. They lived in the Hill District. They built the city of Pittsburgh. The Syrians and the Lebanese families that were a part of the building of Pittsburgh between 1870 and 1890 predates many of those people who are writing in that comment section about we don't want them in our country.
August Wilson, in fact, has talked about that when he grew up in the Hill District, the many Syrian Americans that were there. We're talking with Mayor Peduto, and we have lots of other issues to get to. He's with us for the entire hour. We'll take your calls at 412-246-2002, your tweets, your emails, all of it. When we come back, it's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking with Mayor Bill Peduto, who's making his monthly visit to Essential Pittsburgh about a wide variety of topics.
I'm a little bit salty today, aren't I?
Yeah, well, hey.
You know, it's I with all the excitement of the Buccos and all that stuff that I, you know, talk about how this is great will and the feeling that's out there, I feel like I got that, like, Ghostbusters slime thing going that it's, you know. I'm going to blame it on getting back from that conference and just being exhausted.
I was going to say, when did you get back?
Midnight on Monday, but I started that day, my traveling day. I was with my cousins in Milan, who I never met most of the family members. I never met my cousin's children, and her mother and my mother, their parents were sisters. So my grandmother's sister's family, and it was magical to be able to be with them. But I had like a day and a half. I left their home, what would have been 5:30 in the morning, to get to the train station, to get to the plane, to get to Frankfurt, to get to DC, to get to Pittsburgh, to get back home. So it was a 5:30 till midnight journey. And I didn't really feel it yesterday. I was feeling pretty good. And today
it usually takes a couple days, and you know, you're on dinner time right about now. You're about, you know, a few hours. Your body's going to be telling you to go to bed. So take a nap right, and get ready for tonight.
I'm booked through till like nine tonight. So yeah, I just don't. I got to schedule. And this is the thing. It's like, oh, you do that traveling. You're taking. When I get out to those conferences, I mean, number one, all right, I'm a policy geek about this stuff. So this is like my fantasy league. You know, I'll be able to talk about these issues. And then when I'm with other mayors, there's this excitement that's talking about. And, you know, it's sort of like this challenge of one-upmanship. So there's not like a downtime. It's like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily. And then you come back and it's start over again. But I looked at my schedule and I was trying to think. I was talking to Libby Schaff, who's the mayor of Oakland, California, and I was telling her how much I was looking forward to going home. And she's looking at me like I'm crazy. And I just said, I think this is the longest I've been away from Pittsburgh. And she's there like, it's a week. And I'm there like, yeah, I don't think I left Pittsburgh for a week. And I went back and I looked. I had to go on Facebook, you know, pathetic, but I did, to try to figure out where and when I was away by pictures. And it was in July of 2013, after the primary had ended, that I was away for a week and a half, and I had not been out of the city in 2 years and 3 or 4 months for more than like 3 or 4 days.
Well, it's good that you're back, and your body will catch up with you. And
it better. Because doesn't really have a choice.
Right. Let's take a call. Let's go to Janet from South Hills. Hi, Janet. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Janet. And
hi, Paul. This is Janet. I think Bill Peduto is great.
Bill, Janet, what do you think of Bill's imitation of you?
I didn't hear it. I'm listening on the phone, so I didn't hear it.
It was perfect, Janet.
Yeah, he had you. He must know you very well. So go ahead with your comment or question.
Well, one, I'm just taking this opportunity to let the mayor know how very pleased I am at having followed his mayoral career. And so impressed with his statement about accepting the refugees, especially because we've helped to create that problem. And it's our responsibility to help these people now. So that's just, that's just my feelings about it. And congratulations to the mayor. Secondly, I'd like to know what's going on in Garfield regarding the tiny homes that we're going to be going up there, especially the cost for the prep of each piece of property, because apparently the prep alone is going to push the price of these homes over $100,000. And I'm wondering if anything can be done to make that a less costly endeavor.
First off, on the first part, thank you. It recharges the batteries. And the second point, tiny homes are going to become a significant reality, not only in the city of Pittsburgh, but throughout this country and around the world. And the benefit of them is not that they're just going to be a net zero or a very, very, very high efficiency energy use, but that they'll be an affordable option. You know, you look at apartment buildings that are being built now, and on the high end, they have very small living spaces and very large shared spaces. And the tiny home concept sort of builds around that. People are looking for, they don't need a big bedroom. They don't need a big living space, but they want to have a shared space where they can be with other people. Unfortunately, in Garfield, the developer ran into a number of issues that pushed the cost up. And you're right, it's probably going to be around $100,000. We put in a little bit through the URA in order to be able to keep the cost down to a rate that will show success in this small pilot program. But in the long run, as we start looking at infill in areas where we have a lot of demolition that's occurred in neighborhoods and where we can put housing in between the housing stock that's still there, as we look at neighborhoods that are in transition where the cost and the market price is rising significantly, the option of creating tiny house 400 to 600 square foot is going to become a real strong option. And the people that are looking for that also want to be able to live in an open, modern space that has high design standards and low energy or no energy cost. And that is a lifestyle choice that they want. So you think about an area like Hazelwood and the redevelopment of Hazelwood, and you look at the area down where the working houses were built 100 years ago for the people that worked in the mill. And you mirror that with an option of a 21st century working house that's a tiny house that's solar powered, that has the ability to be that type of space. You are not going to find one person who's going, honey, should we move into the tiny house in Hazelwood or should we move to Bethel Park? But for so many people, that option is something that they want and will be able to be available in Pittsburgh.
Well, there's one of the big issues facing Pittsburgh. We talked about it yesterday with Councilman Ricky Burgess, who I'm sure you're familiar with his City for All agenda plan. That is a solution he's come up with for the problem of affordable housing in Pittsburgh, of which there is a significant shortage. What do you think of his plan?
I think most of it's good. We're still working with him and drilling down on what it is and how specifically he wants to see it implemented. And he's been very, very open of engaging with our administration on being able to present this. The one thing I don't believe in is that there is a one-size-fits-all approach to affordable housing. By the way, affordable housing, one of the other lessons I learned while I was there, is a worldwide issue. It affects every city from Ghana to Japan, and every city is having its own levels and different levels of crisis. If you were to create a box, and this is something, it's an exercise I did one night sitting at my house, watching a pirate game probably, and you put at the top, low income, high income. And then on the left-hand side, you put own, rent. If you're in high income and you own and prices go up, you're okay. In fact, you're better off. You're going to have more money when you sell. If you are at a high income and rent, you are pretty much okay as well, even though for some that are marginal, you may not be able to stay in that neighborhood. You may have to, but you're going to find a place that you're going to want to be in. If you're in low income and you own, for the most part, you're okay. And we've seen this. We've been going through this crisis for 20 years. It was called the South Side, and then Shady Side on the eastern part, and then Friendship, and Bloomfield, and Polish Hill, and Lawrenceville. And for many people who owned, and these are folks that used to work in the mills, and their property values were around $50,000, all of a sudden, their property is worth $150,000. We dealt with the property tax issue. But when they decided to sell, they got more money than their pensions gave them. They won the lottery. And for many of them, they were okay. Now we're at the point of low-income rent. And this takes us back to Penn Plaza. This is the crisis area. How do you deal with people that are low-income rent? The other three are dealt with primarily by themselves. Low-income rent equals displacement. Low-income rent means that as the market goes up and the market price goes up, there is no place for you. And that's where you have to be able to work on an individual basis, whether it's the Hill, whether it is Hazelwood, whether it's the Hilltop communities, or whether it's East Liberty. We need to have specific plans tailored to each of those that address the critical areas. So when Reverend Burgess looks at a holistic approach to it, we try to nail down and look at his legislation and say, I understand how that affects East Liberty, but how does it affect the folks that are living in Sheridan? How will it be different when we're looking at Polish Hill? And what will be the things that we'll need to look at as we move past 62nd Street into the 10th Ward of Lawrenceville? And we need to have specific plans for each of those that go beyond the overall. So when we work with him on this, we want to make sure that the overall addresses the concerns he has, but drill down more neighborhood specific in each of the different criteria that are very much different for the different neighborhoods.
And part of it too, and I discussed this with Reverend Burgess yesterday, is having enough living wage job opportunities for people in Pittsburgh. Toward that end, you have a news conference coming up after this program, after your appearance here, and I'll let you talk about the opportunity that this is going to be announcing.
Well, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the past couple of years about our healthcare workers, and we have this whole new industry that's growing. It's not a new industry. We've been taking care of people's health, I hope, for a couple thousand years, but it's a bigger part of our industry now. And how do you make sure that the lowest paid workers are a part of the new economy and paid enough? So like my grandfather, they can buy their own home, they can send their kid to college, they can live the American dream. What we also have are the people who work in the buildings that we look at as the security officers. There's over 1,000 people working in this industry. And for the most part, they haven't had health care. They've been paid $8 to $10 an hour, and they really haven't had security. Well, I met with the property owners and 32BJ, the SEIU 32BJ, at the very beginning of the negotiation of the new contracts, and just made one simple point. If we have all this great stuff happening in the city and all this economy that's happening, I need ladders of opportunity for those that have been left behind, much like we'd created for those that worked in the mills. And when this new economy takes off, I want to be able to look back and look at pride about what Pittsburgh's economy looked like in the 1950s and those that fought to make sure that everyone was a part of it. And as you negotiate these contracts, please keep in mind that those people that you may not pay enough to, or you may not give health care to, or you may not have it so that they have enough to be able to get from their home to their work, you're leaving it to me and to the people of Pittsburgh to pay through the taxes they pay for access, public access, in subsidized public housing and subsidized public food while you're still making a profit. Let them along for the ride. So today we'll announce new contracts that are going out. For the first time, these workers will have health care, so the public doesn't have to pick it up. The salaries will be some of the highest negotiated for office security workers in the country. And we're going to be partnering with them now through a new program that will be working with our fire bureau to make it so that there's a coordinated effort to keep people even more safe in that shock, the resilience shock that may occur, and that the coordination of the frontline services of those security officers is a part of our public safety planning.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest, Mayor Bill Peduto. He's with us until the top of the hour. We'll take more of your calls. Nikki in East Liberty, I promise we'll get to you. Before we go to break, Mayor, East End Brewing on Twitter says, not that you need it, but we are happy to chip in a six-pack of Big Hop cans to that wager with the Chicago Alderman. So
might not never make it. I'm not going to even assume that I'd have to give it away, but I don't even know if it would make it to Chicago.
Yeah, the mayor's prediction coming up, and more of your questions and mine on Essential Pittsburgh. This is 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest, Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto, with us until the end of the program today. And there's a mayor. You describe what you're showing me there. One of your predecessors is wearing a Pirates jersey.
So Mayor Caligiuri, as people know, is he stands at the steps of the city county building.
Passed him many a time.
And today he's standing at the steps of the city county building with a Pittsburgh Pirates uniform, Caligiuri 15. That the Pirates had put together and the Caligiuri family had agreed would be a nice idea. So if you're on Grant Street today and you happen to pass by the City County building, stop and get your picture taken. Dick Caligiuri has got the spirit.
Coach Caligiuri.
He's saying it's Bucktober.
And indeed it is. Let's go to Nikki in East Liberty, who's been waiting for a while. Welcome, Nikki. How are you? You're on with Mayor Peduto.
Hi. I am calling to talk to the mayor about how he plans when he's working on this wonderful development with affordable housing, how he plans to incorporate green space into that plan. And I don't just mean little parks with slides and swings. I mean actual places for children to play ball and run around.
Nikki, that's a great point. And I also want to apologize to the caller who called before for Enright Park. And it's just, there's so much work that was done, and it was really a good thing for so many people. But I do understand the concerns that they have, and we will work with you to be able to find a way to be able to preserve it or to make something that's better. You're not going to get something that's worse, and you'll be a part of that discussion. A green space is a requirement for it. And what Nikki's saying is, yeah, a green space is required for it, but you know, just having a little bit of grass around a development doesn't really serve a community. It serves the development. We need to start mapping. We haven't done this yet. Of our amenities, which are our parks, our playgrounds, our ball fields, and then a GPS mapping of where the population is, and in particular, those that are under the age of 18, those that are between the ages of 18 and 40, and those that are older, and be able to see what the walking distance is for each, and then what the need is. So we started earlier this year on creating a fixed asset management system. What does that mean? That means that when we took office in 2014, I asked for a list of every building that we have, the city has, not every property that are like houses and vacant lots, but the operation buildings, our fire stations, police stations, rec centers, all that stuff. There wasn't a list. So we went department by department and we compiled the list. We found out it still wasn't complete. So we had to go through utility bills in order to put together that whole list. So now we're looking at that part of it and saying, what do we keep? What do we sell? What do we give away? We need to do the exact same thing with our fields, with our rec centers, with all the different opportunities, and then map it out based upon where people live. We've got 360 dogs living downtown now. Found that out yesterday.
360?
Dogs living downtown. We don't have a dog park. I mean, that's where you find where the need is, where a community. And we'll work with neighborhood groups to start to identify it. What all of these different parts need to have then is a 10-year master plan in order to put it together. And what the biggest missing part of that is, isn't the ability to put all this together. It's to finance it. So we've been talking, as people know, with our nonprofits about how they can help without putting money into the operating budget, but being able to save our fixed assets, whether it's our playgrounds, our fire stations, our urban forest. And that's really where this conversation has gone with the pilot program. So when Nikki talks about, hey, I live in a neighborhood, I have my kids, but I have to get in a car or take a bus to be able to get to a ball field. We want to be able to work with you to be able to use technology to be able to find a way in where that field needs to be so it's around people.
Thank you for the call, Nikki. Let's go to Terry in Polish Hill. Terry, you're on with Mayor Peduto.
Hello, Mayor Peduto.
Hey, Terry, how are you doing?
Doing good. Hey, fantastic idea on the micro houses, by the way, and really support that. I wanted to ask a question about some of the existing housing stock that we have all around the city. Every community here being built from the immigrant population back in the mills, we have 3- and 4-story places, some of which can scare away buyers because of the renovation costs that you incur. One of the ideas we've tossed around the neighborhood is trying to find a way to have that be a stacked set of micro houses where everyone could own a floor, or possibly have one common floor that everyone could share for a dining gathering area. We have thought that that could work with universal design for people of every age. We have a lot of seniors now that don't want to go into homes, but would rather partner up with 3 or 4 of their youthfully minded friends to continue living the way they do. So I wanted to see what your thoughts on that might be.
Terry, I love the idea. And I think that Polish Hill is unique, as you realize, because of the high density properties that are there, especially those that have the 4-story buildings already. So you're not going to have something that's going to take away from the roof line of the neighborhood. You'll have something that will actually build upon the 120-year history of that neighborhood. Just if you're still there, also, I'm just curious, I haven't been down lately, but Brereton, how the development's been continuing.
Well, we've seen the 2 buildings that are across from the old Emma Kaufman Clinic, those are continuing. And I have to admit, we're starting to see some of the prices of homes that have been, let's say, baseline remodeled, hitting some pretty incredible prices. I know a lot of us in the volunteer end of things, we kind of have a little bit of a hitch and say, that's kind of scary. We might not be able to, if we had to move into our own neighborhood, that's a challenge if we'd have to do it today versus when we had our opportunity to do so.
Yep. I mean, as you realize too, you're right in the middle of everything that's happening, and it's just, it moved down from Bloomfield, it moved up from Lawrenceville, and now people have discovered how amazing Polish Hill really is.
We do figure if you have a way to produce a living space, though, that controls your costs.
Yeah.
That are not just your mortgage, but your very efficient, you know, heat, light, and gas.
Yeah.
And having your life outside your home where you have shared spaces and community activities.
Yep.
You know, you can have a fantastic quality of life and kind of...
You mean outside of Pope's?
Sorry, go ahead.
You mean outside of Pope's?
Yeah, well, yeah, that too.
I love the idea. Follow up with Councilwoman Gross. We may have to do a zoning change to make it permittable, so that it isn't a burden for developers. And as long as the community group and your folks down there are supportive of it, we'll work with you to make it happen. And it could be a good pilot for other neighborhoods too.
Thank you, Terry. Lots to get to, and just about 5 minutes left. So a couple of things that I said I was going to mention, so I want to get to them. You've committed at least 10% of the city's operating and capital budget spending to flood control, street and facility improvements, other projects that will improve the city's resilience against challenges it'll face in future years. Why this amount? Why now?
Well, that was the commitment that Roosevelt was looking for. When we went up there, we knew that they were going to ask us to sign a resiliency challenge. And our chief resiliency officer, which is another thing we got from Roosevelt, and the office around it as well, had already started putting together how we're already doing it, what we're talking about doing, and how that 10% goal was something we would be able to meet. What we didn't realize is that, and we weren't told until Saturday, that any city that did agree to it would also be given $5 million, $1 million a year for 5 years to help to make it happen. So I was able to come back from Italy with the promise of $5 million from Rockefeller to help us to get these things done. And when we look at our combined sewer overflow problem, we want to make it so that it's not just a big pipe that breaks in 80 years or has to be replaced, but green solutions around it. When we look at converting our streetlights, we want to create an LED system that's going to be in place for at least a dozen years and will cut the cost of energy bills and in the process. All these different things that we're looking at, we're now going to get the help and the expertise through Rockefeller to actually make it happen.
Kara on Twitter says, love the mayor's focus on transparency, wondering about improvements to Pittsburgh 311. Streetlights and crosswalks are taking a long time to fix near her, apparently.
Yeah, Southside. I followed and have been following the ongoing debacle with trying to replace a light bulb, but it's much more than a light bulb on a pair of steps in the Southside that need to be done. And just to let her know that I'm personally involved in that situation now, too, and I'm not happy with our contractor or the way that the people in the South Side have been treated about that. It's not 311's fault. We actually track 311, and we are able to use data analytics to check everything from the amount of times that a phone rings till they pick it up to the amount of time that complaints get done. And overall, the work that they've been able to do, even though they've had an increase in number of calls because of the Twitter application as well, the amount of turnaround has been cut by over half. So 311 is doing a great job, but there will always be an issue. There will always be that problem that comes up. That's inherent in any organization, but certainly within government. And to just focus on that one, you know, I realize makes it seem like the whole system isn't working, but we follow and we hold them accountable. There's also going to be some upgrades that we'll be announcing later this year to 311 to make it even more efficient. And the other thing is, we'll never have every street light, every intersection painted, every empty lot cut. Every government never does that. You never bat 1,000. I mean, no baseball players ever bat 500. Government will never bat 1,000. Everything, and that's why we constantly are doing things, because you're always having to take care of other things. When we die and we're in heaven, maybe then that's when every lot's taken care of and every street is plowed.
Will government ever bat 400? That's what I...
Well, no, I think you have to figure out what is the percentage that you need to be at. I can tell you with parking, it's 80%. You need to have 80% of the spots filled. Otherwise, if you have 100%, you're not charging enough. If you have less, you're charging too much. So that metric's known. I'm not sure what the metric is for government.
Last thing, and we've got less than a minute, but tomorrow you're launching the Pittsburgh Learning Hub, helping to improve the employment opportunities for transitioning veterans and service members. First project of your Homefront Pittsburgh initiative. What can you tell us about that in 30 seconds or less?
We've got a great partnership with the VA. Pittsburgh's been selected as one of the few cities that are going to be able to partner with this. We're partnering with Google, and we're using even their space. Our goal is to become the welcoming city for veterans. And we're even in discussions now with our medics about how we can start to get some of these veterans that have medical background in order to be able to get their priority and get them to be Pittsburgh medics.
Okay. Just a few seconds left. What's your prediction for the game tonight?
Pittsburgh 2, Chicago 1.
Ooh.
And, yeah, and it's going to be a nail biter. It's going to be a nail biter. But I see us, you know, I see us going down early and then coming back late.
Okay. Well, let's hope it turns out that way. I know a lot of people listening are feeling that way, and that you win the friendly wager with the alderman in Chicago.
Giordano's Deep Dish. Okay. Coming to Dan Gilman's kitchen.
Just save me a piece, will you? It's a Central Pittsburgh. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Mayor Peduto.
Thank you.
Go Bucks. We'll
Go
see
Bucks.
You tomorrow on a Central Pittsburgh.